Welcome to my podcast, Experience Beyond with Anand. I come with almost 25 years of experience in insights and customer experience. And during my tenure, I worked with leading consultancies, as well as on the client side role, implementing insights and CX initiatives. Now, today we have got a very interesting topic for the podcast, which is around customer or churned customers or customer retention, which is one key topic, hot topic for many of the clients that we know of. So topic is secret sauce to 95% customer retention. And my guest to bring this podcast is Dan Kinglis, who is a very experienced, very accomplished, very interesting person. So I will start with, introducing my host, Dan. Why I said he is very accomplished, because he's over 20 years of experience in marketing and customer experience both. And he's worked with leading companies like McDonald's, Discover, Anna, and several B2B companies. And he's implemented several practical and inexpensive experience enhancement for these companies. He's also very accomplished, I said, because he's already written two books in the customer experience space. And I would recommend everyone to go and look for these books, The Experience Maker and Winning at Social Customer Care. Very hot topics for you to review. So Dan, tell me, how do you manage to do all these things in a very short 20 years of career?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super excited to talk with you today. I sort of let my career take me to places, even if they were unexpected. Never expected to move into customer experience. I grew up as a marketer, literally started in direct mail, and I worked my way up through all the digital channels, SEO, social media, et cetera. And it was really when I got into a role in customer experience that I just happened to get lucky. Somebody recruited me into this role, even though I didn't have the background. I fell in love. I realized this was what I was meant to do. And even today, I still look at customer experience through the lens of a marketer, because I believe that customer experience leads to the best marketing there is, which is word of mouth. And when we do it right, we get people talking about us. And so as I was moving along in my career, I got asked at these big companies to go speak on stages on behalf of the companies. And I realized after a little while that I was pretty good at it. And the indicator was not maybe what you would think. I remember speaking one day about Discover, and we were just talking. I was talking about all the cool things we were doing on the digital side of the business. And this woman came up to me afterwards and said, "I never in my life thought of applying for a Discover card. But now that I've heard you speak, I'm going to go home and apply for one." And I was like, "Really? Seriously?" And so I started hearing that more often, and I realized I was getting through to people. That's why in 2019, I decided to leave corporate America and start doing this full time. And so fortunate to be able to do what I love every day and to inspire other people, hopefully, to pick up the baton and make it something they love as well.
I've seen a couple of your videos where you have been a presenter as well as a facilitator for many of such events. And I really love the space, the way you command the space and your entire approach to the entire event. It's great to have you as my host on this conference, and that too on a very important topic, which is all about making sure that your customers are leaving you. So, and which is something which most of the companies I get asked, I've been working with several clients, and one prominent question they have, biggest loss that they have is the customer churn. It impacts their revenue significantly, and they want to address this issue. So what, according to you, have been, driving factors for customers switching to competition? Why would customers do that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I have to understand is that customers generally don't want to switch. It has become easier to switch, but it's still a pain in the neck. Think about, if you're switching banks or something, like, it's a lot of work. So people don't want to do it. So what draws them away? Well, I believe that it is this feeling that this company that I'm spending lots of money with doesn't know me, doesn't care about me, and frankly, would not be changed if I left. And that's as opposed to a company where I say, man, I love this company and they really value me and I feel good every time I use their product or service. That's a customer that's never churning, right? And so what has happened in so many businesses, and you know, I just only recently have I started to hear that private equity companies and venture capitalists are starting to focus on churn rate or its cousin, its opposite, which is retention rate, which is so important because for years and years and years, public companies, private companies, they're only focused on top line growth. They're only focused on bringing in new customers and in increasing sales. But if you're only focused on that, then you're not focused on the people that are walking out the door. And at least my experience in B2B is when you have a high churn rate, it puts even more pressure on your sales team because they're trying to make up for what has already been lost, and then they have to hit this year's goals. And so it puts stress on the entire system, and all you really have to do is put some of your focus on your existing customers, the ones that are paying the bills, that are keeping the lights on, instead of all of your focus on new customers.
One key question which many of my clients have told me that the challenge that they face in understanding who the dissatisfied customers are and why they are leaving, and especially for a very large organization who has got a huge customer base. Imagine companies who have got 10 million or more customers in their base. How do they identify these customers who are dissatisfied or customers who are likely to churn? What practices should they be using, adopting for them to proactively manage the dissatisfied customers?
So I think we have to look at two things. We have to look at qualitative data and quantitative data. Let's look at the quantitative data first. I have not yet run into a company that says we don't have enough data, right? Most companies have too much data. They don't know what to do with all of this data. And so, you know, an example when I was at Discover Card is that we were able to monitor what people were spending on their card and in what categories they were spending and how often they were spending. And right. So you could start to see trends where if somebody is spending, you know, a very consistent amount every month on their card, and then all of a sudden one month that goes down, that should be a trigger warning. That should be a Absolutely. Moment in which the company reaches out to them. Hey, is everything okay? Can we help you with anything? Because who knows what caused that? But one of the things that could have caused that is that person is testing out a new credit card and they're putting some of their spend somewhere else. So when we look at quantitative data like that, you could look at logins to your website. You know, this customer logs in very consistently once a week. Uh-oh, they didn't log in this week. Is that a problem? No, maybe they're just on vacation, or maybe it's the beginning of a problem. So we've got to be paying attention to the quantitative stuff. I think with the qualitative stuff, what happens is we often don't want to face complaints because we're very prideful. We believe in our businesses. There's a little bit of ego at play. It's hard to read complaints. And I always advise my clients, do not be afraid of complaints. In fact, you want to embrace them. Why? Because people who complain do so because they care. They actually want you to solve their problem so they can keep doing business with you. The people you need to be afraid of are the people that never complain and just leave. And I call this the leaky bucket. This is where, and every company has a leaky bucket. There are people that are walking out the door every day, never coming back and never telling you why. So what's so bad about that is that you've lost a customer, your competitor has gained a customer, and you are none the wiser because you don't even know what you did wrong. I would much rather have a customer leave yelling and screaming and telling me everything I did wrong, because maybe I can take some of that and do it right for the next customer. So embracing complaints, even trying to solicit complaints, which sounds crazy, is a great way to help stem the tide of people leaving. Because if we don't know if we don't know how we are not meeting their expectations, we can't adjust.
It's a very interesting point because if you encourage your customers to complain and solicit their complaint and turn it around into positive experiences, it definitely addresses a lot of things. And in fact, one of my clients was telling me that how to use the complaints to internally transform many things within the organizations at two levels. They were using the complaints to help them to build an innovation roadmap where the complaints were being used to identify gaps and improve their products, as well as they were using the complaint to enhance the entire customer journey, the pain points, addressing issues which are related to, say, staff or their touch points, which again, part of their entire strategy to enhance their competitiveness in the market. So brilliant point. However, there are a lot of brands which are concerned with or they end up doing the reactive approach to managing these churning customers. So they are acting very late in the customer journey. It's only by the time the customer is leaving and he's actually signed off saying that I'm closing my account in a banking term, that's when they start reacting and reaching out to the customer. Do you think it's too late? And should the companies, or what kind of strategies companies at this stage have to win back such customers? Or is it too late?
Yeah, I think generally it is too late at that point. And I think that win back strategies might bring you a small percentage back, but it's challenging. And every win back strategy that I've seen usually involves some sort of a promotion. And the problem with that is that if a person is going to respond to a promotion from you, they're going to respond to a promotion from your competitor too. So it's only a matter of time until somebody gives them a better offer and they're gone again. So you're right in suggesting, and I believe that you were suggesting, that we have to address this earlier on before they're walking out the door. And actually, I think this is where your background comes in customer insights. I have this theory that there are three steps to customer insights, and they spell out the word cat. I used to be a cat owner. Now I'm a dog owner, but I love them both. And cat stands for collect, analyze, and take action. And what I find is that the vast majority of companies only do the collect and the analyze. And what happens is they bring in all this customer feedback. They do surveys, they do satisfaction surveys, all this stuff. They analyze it to death and they create reports on it. And they say, well, this is our NPS score and this is our customer satisfaction score. And they put a big report on the CEO's desk. The problem is, A, the CEO doesn't need another report on their desk. They've got plenty of reports. And B, just because we analyze the feedback and put it into a report doesn't mean anything changes. And it doesn't mean that we really know how we got here. This is my biggest criticism of NPS, is that it tells you, and that's called Net Promoter Score, is it tells you how you're doing this very moment in time, but it doesn't tell you why. And so what I find is that companies that depend very much on NPS, when it goes up, everybody high fives each other and says, we're doing such a great job. And when it goes down, they blame the weather or climate change or the political situation or inflation or whatever they can think of, because they really have no idea why it went up or down. And so if we don't get to that third step, which is take action, then why do we collect the data in the first place?
So yeah, Dan, it's a very important concept that you brought in, CAT, which is collect, analyze, then take action, which take action becomes very important ingredient for any company to make sure that they are delivering on what understanding they are gaining by collecting information. So it's critical part, right? So having a practice where you are able to identify dissatisfied customers during their journey and not at the churning stage actually helps clients to win them back. So any strategies that they should have from your experience, what the clients can do if they have identified a dissatisfied customers, how can they make him to be your promoter?
I do think it is really important that we stop being afraid to talk to our customers. Now, I understand if you have millions or billion customers, you can't talk to all of them. I understand. But let's say that you have found a group of customers that you think are dissatisfied. The very best thing you can do is meet them in person, talk to them on the phone, have a conversation with them. Because when you do that, you start to hear the intricacies that do not come out in a survey and that don't come out in even in a transcript of a customer service call. You start to hear the emotions in their voice. You start to hear their feelings around the situation. And I have found every time I do this that I know very quickly what needs to be done. When I was working in these big companies, I would spend a lot of time in the call center, and I would sit with agents and I'd listen to live calls. And there is nothing quite like hearing the actual voice of your customer. We talk about VOC, voice of the customer, all the time, but how many people legitimately hear the voice of the customer? Very, very few. Most of them are reading about it on reports that are summarized and cleansed. But when you actually hear somebody talking, incredibly powerful. And every time I did this, I'd go back to my desk with this long list of things that I knew I needed to fix. So that's my advice, is that we've got to spend more time actually talking with our customers, or a sampling of our customers. And people who say they can't do that, I always love to ask the question, and feel free to steal this, go ask any company what their number one asset is in their whole company. And Anand, if they answer any question other than their customers, they're wrong, because customers are the only things that if they go away, we have no company. We can lose our employees. We can lose our building. We can lose everything. If we still have customers, we have an ongoing company. If we lose our customers, it's over. And so our biggest assets are our customers. And yet so many companies are afraid to actually talk with them.
Are there any success stories where the brands have been able to turn around their detractors into promoters?
Yeah, so one of my favorite stories about this comes from the candy company Skittles, you know, the uh-huh. candy.
Yeah.
And a number of years ago, Skittles made a decision to change one of the flavors of their main bag of candy. So there's five colors in there, and they changed the green color from lime to green apple. What was fascinating about this change, because at the time, green apple was a very popular flavor, it created a separation of people, some of whom were so happy that they got rid of lime and went to green apple, and some of whom, like me, did not like that change at all, because I love lime and I do not like green apple. So, and I used to buy, when I was eating candy, I used to buy bags of Skittles and literally separate all the greens out and throw them away, because I did not like that flavor at all. So Skittles was faced with millions of people on social media commenting about this one way or another. And I remember I was one of those people that commented, and they would usually respond to me, and it was a little bit snarky and sort of fun. So one day they decided they were going to bring lime back, and they were going to actually reverse their decision that they had made a couple of years ago, which in itself is really impressive, because very few companies do that. But they started a marketing campaign that I thought was absolutely brilliant. They first of all sent an individualized tweet to every single person who had tweeted a complaint about moving to green apple. It was like 184,000 people, all including me, all got a personalized tweet that said, "We're really sorry for taking away lime. We'd like to make it up to you. We're going to bring it back." And there was a link to go get a free bag of Skittles. And then they did a massive campaign in which they apologized to all of the people that they had upset. And on the screen is a scrolling list of Twitter handles that is 184,000 people long. And I mean, it's like, it's scrolling so fast because there's so many people. I thought that was such a brilliant way to bring people back. And of course, when I saw this, I'm like, Skittles is one of my favorite brands ever. Even though they very much disappointed me by taking away one of my favorite flavors, but they made up for it by bringing it back and by having the marketing presence to sort of poke at themselves and to have fun with that product change. So it's a great example. Yeah, it's a great example of sort of taking a detractor and turning them back into an advocate.
Very innovative and creative. Oh, thank you for sharing that story.
Of course.
So thanks, Dan. Yeah, it was amazing speaking to you. And thank you for sharing certain insights on how to manage your detractors and customers, dissatisfied customers. Very insightful. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.